What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kinda Funny's Batman in Review. That's right. We are ranking and reviewing every theatrically released Batman movie. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the big dog, Kevin Koala.
Hey, guys.
One of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
It's boiling acid!
I love that the movie starts with the classic Greg Miller quote. Of course, we have the Hispanic heartthrob, Andy Cortez.
Did you know?
And then you introduce Nick,
okay,
and
he goes, gotcha. And Nick Scarpino, the producer slash producer.
There's moments in this movie where they just ask immediately buffs. It just doesn't care. Doesn't care.
They just ask Bruce Wayne, they ask Batman questions, and he responds completely differently. And I'm like, did Val Kilmer read the script to this? You know what I mean? There's like a moment where he's like, why can't I kill you? And he's like, I had to save them both because I had both Batman and Bruce Wayne. And he's like, that's not the
not
question.
Not because I have to be, because I choose to be.
That's not what I
be.
Asked you.
And then he smiles. I love the smile.
The smile, the Batman smile with the, oh, it's so bad.
I feel like he did a really good Keaton, though. Like, when the movie started, I was like, did they ADR this whole movie?
He did good at dropping the voice, sure. It's what's funny is I don't think I realized, because these movies came out so far apart from each other, that they really did keep a lot of the Tim Burton flair and some of the style. They just jacked up the campiness to like 115 and all the color. So I think, obviously, like, the criticism of Tim Burton's Batman Returns is this one's not dark at all. This one is just completely cheesy and campy. But I think that they went a little too far with it. Namely, I think it's Tommy Lee Jones. I think he's the one part of this movie that I think I wish they had reined back a little
not
bit.
Jim Carrey.
Because... Well, Jim Carrey, I think, did a good job as being silly as the Riddler, but I think this movie suffers from the same problem the 66 movie has, which is all of the enemies, all the bad guys, the rogues gallery, mm-hmm. are like at 120. Mm-hmm. Whereas I liked a little bit more of the dynamic energy that like Catwoman and Penguin had. They both seemed crazy, but crazy in their own way, and they brought something a little crazy and special to it. Whereas both Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey in this just feel like they're
off
trying
the
to
rocker.
Outdo. Yeah, they're just gone.
Batman Forever, released on June 9th, 1995, directed by Joel Schumacher, who most importantly wrote The Wiz. Never forget. He also rose to prominence after directing St. Elmo's Fire and The Lost Boys. A little update on Joey ass right here. After Joel Schumacher died in June 2020, media outlets started reporting the possible existence of a Schumacher cut.
Oh.
With the first rumors being thrown in by American journalist Mark Bernadine, this version was believed to be darker and contain less camp than the theatrical cut. Some of the differences include Bruce facing off against a human-sized bat, the darker, more serious tone, less of an emphasis on Dick Grayson, and a focus on Bruce's psychological issues with Chase. In total, the cut uses about 40 minutes of footage. Warner Bros. Confirmed the cut exists after an interview with Variety, although they have no plans to release it, and we're unsure about whether what, if any, footage remains. Some of the aforementioned deleted scenes make up a portion of this footage.
Yeah,
I don't know, Greg. Maybe you need to get on this.
I'll start right now, because that was the thing. I remember hearing this news story, then quickly and promptly forgetting about it for things I needed to remember. And then last night in, I think maybe the Kinda Funny subreddit, maybe on Twitter, somebody put up an image of Val Kilmer standing against a giant bat. Yeah. And I was like, I vaguely remember this story when I saw this stupid ass image.
Well, I watched one of the, there's an intro scene on YouTube that's completely different, where it's like it starts in Arkham Asylum with that professor that looks a lot like Scarecrow, even though his name's not.
But yeah, they call him Burton, which I assume Burton. Is a nod to Tim Burton.
Yeah.
But he should have been Ichabod Crane, yeah.
Yeah, I guess produced this, which I spaced on that idea too, that they were like, we just want to keep you associated with this, but we don't want you making any creative decisions too.
Isn't that just perfect, like,
give me the money.
How they always do it. Isn't that what happened with Nolan in the DCEU? It's like, all right.
I thought he had a huge part of that. Don't forget.
Burton did?
No, Nolan.
They're joking. Oh.
Yeah.
I
was saying, Christopher Nolan didn't even watch Man of Steel. I guarantee he has no idea what happened to Man of Steel.
Didn't they boot Tim Burton? And that's why...
they didn't want him back as director. Yeah. He was, I guess, developing the project.
They talk about this in the Death and Returns of Superman Lives, where mm-hmm. he had a meeting with them and they sat down and they were both talking. And eventually he's just like, you don't want me to direct this, do you?
We're going
right? Yeah. This isn't, we don't, I don't want to make fucking McDonald's toys like you did my last film. So no, we're good.
Yeah.
A budget of $100 million, box office of 336.6, a runtime of 2 hours and 9 minutes. It's Batman Forever, ladies and gentlemen. What a movie. What a ride. From beginning to end, questionable choices, man.
It's just, it's so weird because I don't know who this movie was for. I imagine it has to be for very young children. I watched this when I was, this came out in 1995, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I watched this when I was 15 years old and I was like, I'm bored as shit in this movie. And this movie,
I don't know how you could be bored by this movie.
Because
it is not boring at all.
It's so much happening, but none of it, like, I don't care about any of it. Does that make sense? Like, I don't really,
it's not that much worse than the other ones. I'm gonna fucking say it. This one commits to a vision, and sure, it's campy and it's not good. I'm not saying it's good, but at least it commits and it does it all the way. And Riddler is so awesome. I love him, how fucking ridiculous he is. Whether he's Enigma or Riddler, it's just like, it is too much. It's all too much. But at least everything's too much, as opposed to like trying to pretend that it's dark and trying to pretend that it has something more to say than what it actually does, which is, hey, here's a good guy and here's a bunch of bad guys. I actually think that this Batman in this one like works for the most part. Like, it doesn't seem like he's bloodthirsty.
I feel like he's such a like background character. Like, we spend more time with like getting to know Robin than anything.
Well, yeah. I mean, you figure like throughout the, Nick's so mad he's just leaving the podcast. He won't hear this. He won't hear that you don't hate this. If that's the biggest thing about Batman, right, is that they go, like, when Two-Face and Riddler are on there, let's steal a bunch of money to finance our weird box corporation. They're out every night just robbing Gotham blind. And the only exposition you get on why Batman isn't there is Bruce watching TV and the news anchor being like, and still no sign of Batman. And it's that thing of like, yeah, what the fuck? Why isn't Batman out there? And then when he shut, like, they're teasing this whole thing of, oh man, like, he doesn't want to be Batman anymore. He wants the change. But they really don't show him wrestling with it. It's more at the end when he talks about it, when he shuts down the cave and he's telling Dick he's done, that you're like, oh, okay, I guess that makes more sense. That's why he wasn't doing it.
Didn't he do that way earlier? You know, like, he stopped using the cave way earlier. It's weird that it was at the end where he goes and walks and like turns it all off. And it's just like, but you haven't been going up for like weeks.
He was
maybe
thinking about it though. You know what I mean? It's like that thing where you like, you stop using the exercise equipment, but you're not committed to selling it.
So,
right?
Then you sell it. Here's the thing. I went into watching this movie and I was like, man, this is probably going to be the worst one, but I enjoyed it a lot more than I remember. You know,
I never thought that it would be the worst one. Yeah. I went into this movie thinking, like, I think within the first 10 minutes.
Andy, the next one has Arnold Schwarzenegger. It is no way it's the worst one. All right.
How do I say his last name?
Arnold who? Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Where do we get there? We'll get there, right?
I at the beginning of this movie, I thought to myself, wow, you know what? This movie kind of rules. It's like bad, good, right? But then it kind of quickly gets bad, bad. And that really kind of bummed me out, because for a lot of the parts, I thought, oh, this is entertaining because it's not good, right? There's like a lot of like bad campy parts that are supposed to be overacted and supposed to be overdone, and it's supposed to kind of make you roll your eyes or whatever, but it's still entertaining in a way. But then there's some straight up just really bad, bad stuff in this movie. Again, on the Nick 3-finger scale, like, there's some really bad stuff because it's not, like, badly made or badly acted or badly written. And I think it just kind of keeps on getting worse and worse as the movie goes on.
Yeah, for starters, the movie's horribly lit. It's I've always hated that they took the style of Tim Burton and just the, by making it campy, they shoot everything way deeper than they should, and everything's just a colored gobo going around. After a certain point, you're like, we're in this scene way too long for there to be that many light movements happening and this many colors. Like, the first time you see, exactly, Andy, but it all looks cheap. That's my big criticism with this, is none of the sets look like they have any level of production value. They all look like they're just slightly better and like darker lit than the 1966 movie. There's the moment where they go to the party, which, by the way, and I never picked up on a lot of the nods that they do, where he like dresses exactly like Bruce Wayne until this one time, very well done. But they go to the party and like, they're like, here's going to be the you have to go into this super high tech machine that can read your mind, and all it is that cheap like pool plastic that's like corrugated that they just painted green. And when he opens it up, when he goes to open it up, it like waves a little bit because it's so fucking
tight. it's all it is like that thing, like, it's that material you put either above where you keep your trash cans, or it's a shitty door roof. You move in.
It's a shed roof that you buy at Home Depot.
It's the cool colored Lego pieces that we all loved.
Oh hell yeah!
Where they got
semi-translucent.
Yeah, they look so cool in certain lighting.
There's scenes in this that are so bad that I'm like, I feel bad for Drew Barrymore that she was in this movie, and
she is lucky she has to be in this movie.
She was like still in the outs of Hollywood at 95, right? Wasn't she coming off of a bad turn?
This was very important for a young Kevin.
In
terms of the set,
is my Gotham Delight.
Secret's Delight.
Yeah, Andy hit me with the song.
Gotham's Delight. I got the name wrong. It's Gotham's Finest.
It's Gotham's Finest, everybody. One of our podcasts within a podcast within a podcast within a podcast. This will be the only time we ever do the real song for it, called Secret Delights, where we talk about the thing we didn't expect to like in this movie that we liked. That was just there. You didn't see it coming and it was there. So far, other entries in this Hall of Fame include from the 1966 Batman, Joey and Gia were excited about Catwoman's Russian costume, and of course, Adam West's small nipples. Prince soundtrack from 89 was also voted in. Then from Batman Returns, the Penguin Army from Tim, that's the one he liked. Phantasm, Kevin liked motorcycle designs. I liked the no. And then Andy liked the Alfred State. I don't know what that last one means. Stash. Oh, that's better. All right.
Alfred State, like it's like a deep state.
I was like, what the hell's the Alfred State? But it says it. You want to put in Drew Barrymore here for Batman Forever?
Yeah, I just had a huge crush on her.
I'd like to second that as well.
Okay.
But yeah, the sets, for as bad as they were, I thought it worked though, because this whole movie hit that tone.
Well,
it's as opposed to 89 in Returns, where it's like there's a lot of bad sets and it's like it's trying to be serious and it's like it looks like there's like shitty rock behind him. It's like a fake plastic pool rock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this they just did a lot with lighting. They just made that choice. They're like, we really want to do a lot of the texture and of the environment with lighting. And it's just so much. Like the first time we see Nicole Kidman. She has an asterisk globe, a gobo on her or whatever. What's the symbol for Red Hot Chili Peppers? That's an asterisk, right? Like, it's just on her.
I know what you mean. When we see her, outside of the second bank of Gotham during the heist, we get a shot of her talking to Commissioner Gordon. She's in like blackness, and the asterisk is like moving on her.
Yeah, it's so
weird.
I just
felt like that looked cool. Like those little.
So
like,
did Joel Schumacher.
It was so exaggerated. Really, I felt like it worked. It reminded me a lot of Speed Racer.
Well, I mean, it's supposed to, right? It's supposed to be a cartoon. It's supposed to be campy. He wanted to make sort of the equivalent to a live action cartoon and really push that camp. And I think I just remember watching this going like, it's too much. I wish this was a little bit more cinematic. Tim Geddes from Kind of Funny.
Can we just make a decision to stop giving Batman girlfriends? I just don't understand. We're now four movies into this. And it's just like, how come every single fucking movie features the exact same plot of... There's a girl in his life. It's some rando ass girl that means fucking nothing.
For the record, it's not just some girl. It's a blonde girl.
Yeah.
Okay. There's that. I mean, I guess it was a red.
They don't even try. And the next one is just McPherson.
Next one, and like, there's no, you know, no future spoilers. No future spoilers. No future spoilers.
But it's so they just drop it all together.
But I just hate it because it's like it's distracting every single time. Yeah. It's always like the story is always fucking forced into this thing that's like, let me see a Batman movie. Let me see a movie about the bad guys and Batman and Bruce Wayne and all this stuff. There's always this plot, and it's always the same fucking plot, which is he is so horny and distracted by how horny it is, and Alfred's just kind of like, hey man. Use that horniness for good. You should stick with this woman. Stop being dark and Batman. And it's like, come up with a fucking new story. And it's like, these are sequels to each other. Like, these is supposed to be in the same narrative where it's like, come on. Like, how is it there's always just some new girl coming in that he's just like, this might be it, man. Maybe I'm gonna put up the cowl. No, you're not.
It was the 90s.
It was the lazy filmmaking, right? I mean, that was the thing. It's like everybody's like, you have to have a romance in these movies to make them palatable. And so I don't agree with them. But I also think I'm with you, Tim, and why I think obviously as we go on, it gets more interesting, especially as Nolan, you know, does what he does. But to look at this one, Nick, last night watching it, and in 95, right? I'm 12 years old. When this comes out, I'm 12 years old.
You would have been the target audience for this,
and I dug it. Like, that's the thing is where I remember, you know, for me as a kid, I thought, you know, as a kid, Batman 89 and Returns were too dark, right? Especially as a Superman fan, like I wanted some color, I wanted some action like that. So I remember Batman Forever not noticing this complete turn to camp, but instead noticing like what we're talking about, the roots of what the Batman universe already was suddenly then being amplified by this. And then I think Batman Forever going way too far with it, but I digress. We'll get there next week. For this one, I really dug the film, and watching it now as an adult for the first time in forever, right? Because I had the VHS and I remember
Batman Forever.
Fucking playing it over and over and over again, and listening to Kiss from Rose over and over and over again that summer because it was everywhere. But watching it as an adult, like, right, it really struck me of like how much they were just trying to, in this new post-Burton world, replicate Bond, where it must have been, this is going to print money every time. Get a leading it man in there to be Batman. Get a really hot woman in there to be whoever's the hottest actress of the time. Get her in there, put her there. Yeah, exactly. And then we put them all in the poster. We can have a song just like Bond, right? Yeah, we'll have a song. It was Kiss from Rose this time. I don't know what they did for Forever. Garbage? Does that sound right?
It's probably. It's interesting though, because I think they wanted Val Kilmer to be the guy. I just think that he did not get along with anyone at all, ever. Mm. And I think that Joel Schumacher, like, there's a quote I read where Joel Schumacher's like, he did me two really good favors. Val Kilmer did me two really good favors. One, he accepted the role of Batman, and two, he made it so that no one would ever cast him as Batman again, and I never had to direct him again.
I mean, it's weird though, like each other. Because like him as Batman, it's like,
he's good.
For the first time I look at him, I'm like, this is Bruce Wayne. I buy this. You're actually a playboy. I totally buy this. Yeah. And him as Batman, there's moments in this, even in the beginning of the movie, for how stupid it is. They're stuck in the little safe, and he gets the guy's hearing aid to like put up against the thing and crack
it. My hearing aid.
We got more detective. We got more like Batman figuring out a problem and actually solving something.
You see that with the Riddler, right? When they're walking around, he's like, clock this, that. And he's like, him and Alfred are going
so
over
bad. But it's, oh, so, but it's like 1960s. I mean, again, for what this movie is, he committed. And you're right, Tim. Joel Schumacher committed to this vision. It was his vision. He wanted to make it more cartoonish and childish and like campy. And he nailed it. But what I don't, it's just, it almost feels like a parody at times, though. And specifically, it does. Right when it begins, he's like, sir, are you going to have dinner?
Dude, the fucking opening. The fucking opening. The first, they like, you know, to Tim's point, well, love it or hate it, they had a vision, they committed to it, and they punch you in the fucking face. Like, can I persuade you to take a sandwich?
I'll get drive-thru.
Oh, fucking goddamn. And I remember seeing that 900 times in the McDonald's commercials, and it was like, that's why it's there, right? That's what they were building this for now.
But that's the thing, though. It's like, this movie actually gives moments that, like, from the get-go, it's like, hey, the Batmobile's cool. Let's just fucking show the Batmobile.
Dude, the Batmobile sucks.
No, but I mean, not, yeah. Sorry.
It's the not Batmobile actually
movie,
cool.
The Batmobile in this movie sucks.
Andy hit the song.
As a concept.
Andy hit the song.
Andy,
the Batmobile looks like a fucking Kanye West shoe.
We have the best Batmobile ranking list on the podcast within a podcast. Currently, number one, the Batmobile from 1989, Batman. Number two, the Phantasms Batmobile. Number three, Batman Returns. We didn't like the luge. Number four, 66 Batmobile. Where do we want to put this fucking atrocity that is the Batman Forever?
I say
fucking
dead last.
Yeah,
easy.
This thing sucks.
Yeah.
I hate it.
That's what I'm saying. The Batmobile as a concept is cool. So starting the movie off with it, it's just like, we're going to actually show off this shit and it's fucking cool. Use the shadows, blah, blah, blah. Let's go. And Nick, I agree with you that this movie it commits so hard that it almost hits parody. But that works for me more than the other ones, because for as crazy as the plan the Riddler and Two-Face have of this box, it makes sense in this world way more than Joker's plan or Penguin's plan, specifically Penguin's plan in the last movies, where it's just like, at least they're committing to this and they're showing us every step of the way of how they get there with it all, as opposed to just, I'm going to steal all the firstborns. And you're like, Tim, that's the plan?
Tim, I have a question. The plan for the Riddler was to set these up in everyone's house and then stick an antenna on his head and get everyone's intelligence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Does he not do that? Doesn't it, like, he succeeds in his
plan,
right?
It's no longer filtered. When his head gets all distorted at the end, like, that thing gets blown up in the middle. So it's like, imagine.
Did you read this in like some fun trivia book or something?
No, this is just Greg's interpretation, both as a 12-year-old and now as an adult. You know what I mean? But imagine it this way, Kevin.
Cigarettes.
Like a coffee, like a normal ass coffee pot. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Where you got the filter, you put the grounds in it, you shut the thing. Imagine if we took away the filter. Okay. Then you'd still be getting the coffee. The water would still be getting run through, but there'd be grounds in it.
You're getting grounds in there. Got it.
That thing that Batman blows up at the very end. The giant fucking popcorn machine above him.
Also, a very effective move. Like, he had no power in the situation. Then he just shoots up and just takes over.
I will say to speak positively about a lot of the stuff. Like I like his use of gadgets in this, and I like like how he's like they Joel Schumacher was like, you know, we could do way more with some of the action sequences and actually have some of the choreography. Like when he. It doesn't make any sense because the bank vault weighs probably like 400 tons. But like when he swings it back in, I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty
right good. In the same hole.
Right. Yeah, puts it right in the perfect same. I was like, oh, that was kind of cool. That's such a Batman thing to do.
They just like rewound the footage.
Yeah, yeah, like totally. Yeah,
but there's just moments where because I think they couldn't literally stick a lot of the landings, they cut away from some of the action. Namely, when he's supposed to like land in the Batman chair. Or excuse me, in the chair.
Oh, when he slides down the thing, yeah.
Or when he slides down these things, when he does all these things, I'm like, oh, that's such a cool start to it. But they couldn't figure out how to shoot it in a way where it made sense to end it, so they just cut away from it to the outside.
They couldn't shoot it because that slide doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's true.
they couldn't figure it out because it doesn't make sense.
Do you think that anyone that cleans Bruce Wayne's office is like, why does he have a trapdoor underneath his desk?
Nobody notices. No, it's a lot like Batman 66. It's a lot like Batman 66, right? Where they do things and cut away at the last second, so they don't like when. Fucking Two-Face jumps out of his helicopter that he's put the club on to drive it into the first, statue of Gotham. Club. And then he jumps out and Batman sits down and Batman looks up, and like you see the rotor blades start going into the skull of the fucking statue. We still get Batman. And then it's like he explodes. And then you're like, was Batman in there? We just get this like him jumping out of the fucking thing. Then he's in the water. You're like, is he drowning? And again, it's them rewinding the footage of him going up.
But here's what's weird about that shot is we do get a shot of him rather kind of nimbly reaching out and pulling himself quickly out of like whoever stuntman was pulled himself out of the window and jumped out, which is cool. I was like, oh, that was dope. But then there's other moments where like he's about to do something and we just cut away. And I'm like, I don't understand why we needed to do that, because Val Kilmer can actually move fairly well in the suit. And
it's a good suit.
To Tim's point, like there's a moment at the end where or not at the end, I think maybe midway, where he's like, I'm going to go kill Two-Face. And he's like, who, try to stop me. And and Bruce Wayne stands up and he's like shirtless. He goes, I can stop you. And I'm like, oh, fuck. That's kind of cool. Like he
Chris O'Donnell just looks away though. And he does my other favorite line from the movie. Alfred, hang this next to the bat suits where it belongs. You like, fucking tell
like, and Alfred's just like, okay. And it's just like, Alfred, what the fuck? Whose side are you on, man?
I agree. I like Alfred on this one. No, I'm right. With Alfred on this one. Yeah,
I've said it this whole, this version of Batman where we've had the same Alfred now three times. He's a fucking idiot. He's got to stop letting people in, you know?
All right, we're here. We're at Ragu Alfalfa, everybody. This is Rad Guys Talk Alfreds, where we rank the Alfreds in the Batman cinematic universe. Right now, the Alfreds stand like this. Number one, Mask of the Phantasm Alfred. Number two, 1989 Alfred. Number three, Batman Returns Alfred. And number four, 66 Alfred. Where do we want to put Batman Forever Alfred?
What are we crediting him with this one? Like, what's his claim to fame?
I mean, he supports Robin.
Yeah,
Bruce Wayne at no point acts as a foster father or ward to him. Only Alfred does.
But and also,
he says Master Dick a lot.
Yeah,
he does.
That's how you put that on your Instagram stories, Andy. Big fan. Big fan of that Master Dick.
Also,
I personally would make the case for him to be number two on Ragu Alfalf, where he'd be the second best Alfred we've seen so far. Because I appreciate that this Alfred has more to do. He's supporting Dick. He doesn't take Bruce Wayne's shit about it. I love that line where he's like, and I'm fucking up, but like, young boys seeking revenge need far less encouragement or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? He knows what's up. He makes him the fucking Robin suit. He's all about it. This Alfred's great.
I agree
by that.
Sure.
You don't have the votes, Kevin. Suck it out.
I thought he was doing a great job until there's one scene in this movie. There's one scene in this movie where I'm like, how could you not kick this kid out of the house? And it's when he's doing the laundry / kung fu.
Yeah. He mops it up. He cleans it up.
Fuck.
Nick took that personally, though. He saw that. No, he was just like, this was me.
He's like, his form's all wrong.
His form's pretty good. But from a standpoint, from like a storytelling standpoint, I know why they put this in here. They're like, we don't have anything to explain how Robin can fight, so clearly we have to show him fighting before he goes out and fights. Otherwise it's going to be really weird that he knows, like, because you know the whole Batman training with like all these masters and trying to become the best fighter / you know, hand-to-hand combat expert on the planet. It makes sense that a kid that spent most of his life doing gymnastics would also be a badass, right? No. How do we show that he's a badass? How about if he wrings out his laundry with his foot? Dope.
God,
That's cool, man.
Hey, I got to say, though, in another classic Gia Harris Batman moment, we get to the circus. Oh, this God. Family's flipping around. And I look at her, and I'm like, oh, she has no idea. She has no fucking idea.
Oh, no way.
Like, she just didn't put together that it was Robin. So when that was revealed, it was definitely like a, oh, that's Robin. Like, I love it.
Gia had such a better upbringing than all of us.
No, she's missing giant parts. Like it just happens that she got with Tim, who's like, watches all these things for in review.
It's true.
Yeah. Like, but it just worked out.
She knows so much more about stuff that Tim just doesn't care about, like Shakespeare.
I just love it because she watched 66. Science. Like, Robin was in 66, but remember, we don't get an origin story.
Yeah, there's no origin story. Right.
That's going to get us claimed.
It doesn't sound good, Greg.
It's so loud. Oh, so loud.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the new segment, Rockin' Robin.
We don't need any more segments in this. We don't need
Where
it.
Where are we ranking Robin's?
It's the same Robin.
Why? Quick question here.
What are we thinking
of Robin? Wait, why didn't we have this section for the 66?
Because it was the only one.
Just thought about it. Right, just thought right, about right. it right now.
This is the only time we could write.
Why did they? Why did they try to pass off a 30-year-old man as some sort of teenager?
I don't know. I mean,
like, they could have just gone a little younger.
Earring. The earring was for.
He was a college kid.
Well, also they said college kid multiple times. And it's like that they're usually 18 when they're going to college, right? Also, he's not a college kid
anymore.
How old was Chris O'Donnell in this? Yeah, because I remember looking back on it when we were getting ready for this one. I was like, oh, yeah, he's 30 years old. Then I watched it. I'm like, he does look young. He is young here, but not like young. He's not Dick Grayson. I'm a 12-year-old. Like, you know,
he was born in 1970, so he was 25 when he did that movie.
Wow, that's a good math.
Fuck, that's pretty old. Yeah.
They were gonna get Leonardo DiCaprio, and
he was like, I'm not doing it.
he didn't like Schumacher.
I think was going to do it. It was supposed to be Marlon Wayans.
All right. I think Chris O'Donnell's Robin in Batman Forever is better than the 66 Robin. So I'm putting vote him as number one.
Yeah. Although he does have that line, which I thought was so good. The holy
rusted metal, Batman.
He's like,
it's metal and it's holy.
But you know that they... You know they thought they were so fucking creative.
Oh, they did. Yeah,
that was a great line.
When they thought it, they're like, "Whoa, dude, this is crazy!" Like you all are referencing stuff.
I know you weren't born yet, but the '90s really was a buffer between the '80s and the 2000s when we were still figuring a lot.
By definition, yes,
we were just figuring a lot of the stuff out. And you know, and they say like sometimes you have to just spend a lot of time failing to learn. That's what this was.
They do say that
this was a lot of experimentation and being like, "We're gonna nail this." And then literally in 1998, everyone looked back on this. They were like, please don't let Joel Schumacher make any more of these movies. These are abysmal.
Chris O'Donnell, sticking with him for a bit, he insisted that he drive the Batmobile for his joyride scene. So he did. He did. That's and then awesome. he crashed it into a curb.
Dude, Chris O'Donnell was a fucking thing.
Cost $200,000 to fix.
A fucking thing for a while.
Why did the fin open up? There's a point where he's driving.
Why did the Batman Returns thing turn into the luge? Because Batman has to be ready for anything. Dude, I don't know if you're aware of this. Real quick, I don't know if you're aware of this. In this movie, we're shown the true purpose of the Batmobile, which is to run from villains.
Yep.
To run from villains. Batman drives it up a wall. He's so desperate to get away from three bad guys. He kills two of those bad guys. They get a car accident, a nuclear explosion. Then he looks out the rearview mirror and sees Two-Face going, and he doesn't go, maybe I should get out of the car and beat his ass and stop him right now. He's like, I'm fucking out of here. Peace. I don't even want to be Batman. I'll explain this 45 minutes from now.
There's also a wonderful moment where they... Obviously, in the beginning of it, he's setting a trap for Batman. But there's a whole solid 10 minutes of this movie dedicated to a montage of them just wreaking havoc on the town and robbing everything. And I'm like, where is Batman. Isn't this what Batman?
We covered this while you got up. We covered this while you got up. Yeah, that, and then we come back to the TV, and the newscaster drives home that point that Batman doesn't talk about until later on. He's like, "I'm done being Batman. Shutting all this down. Yeah, Chase has shown me the way." And now that we're here, Andy hit the song. It's time for Belle of the Batman, where we rank the love interests in the Batman cinematic universe. Currently, number one is Vicky from 1989. Number two is Andrea from Phantasm. Number three is Catwoman Returns, and number four is Russian Catwoman from 66. Where do we want to put the horniest horn dog ever, Chase Meridian?
They did not do that any favors.
I'm going number one, man.
Hell yeah.
Just like this. How am I coward? What's number one right now?
She's terrible. Vicky Vale. Terrible. Vicky Vale's way more interesting.
Vicky Vale sucks. Straight up sucks. Nicole Kidman is just like, I'm horny for both Bruce Wayne and Batman, and we're going to make that shit happen. And I love her looking in and just being obsessed with Batman. Every line of dialogue she has about it, I'm just like, hey,
the scene where she's like,
"Come
at my house at midnight. I'll see you later."
Yeah,
fuck yeah.
Come to my house at midnight. I'm gonna be naked and sleeping. All right.
Here's staying up to midnight is real hard sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Why? So she's like a consultant for the police. Is that what she does in this movie? Yeah.
She's a criminal so psychologist, right?
Right. I guess that makes sense. So every time like any of the big villains come out, they're like, "We got to have a consultant come out and like tell us that these people are crazy." And then sit there and explain why Harvey Two-Face is crazy, even though we know it. That's Harvey irrelevant.
They call him that over and over again. I hate it.
Yeah, me too.
This character is just very, very, very not good. I don't think it needed to be in there. They're not even trying to make her anywhere close to two-dimensional. They just kind of shoehorned her in there to be the sex symbol and to, I guess, give Val Kilmer someone to flirt with when he's not hanging out on screen with Chris O'Donnell and Alfred. Read into that what you will. I don't know, but like, I don't know this. I just feel like Nicole Kidman deserves better than this. I think Chris O'Donnell.
Oh, yeah.
I think Chris O'Donnell is probably right where he's supposed to be.
Chris O'Donnell deserves better than this too. Meridian.
No, Chase Meridian. I mean, even the name is generic and stupid.
The character.
Andy, what do you think of Chase Meridian?
I'm with Nick. I think she's just kind of a useless character.
I'll say something crazy. Kevin and Tim, they're thinking of it. They're horn dog brains number one because she's a horn dog just like them. I'm saying dead last. I think even Russian Catwoman was better. I enjoyed her arc better than the Chase Meridian arc.
They all fucking suck. Just like, at least this one just commits to what she actually is. The rest of them try to pretend. But yeah, they put
Russian Catwoman committed to who she was.
Okay, sure, fine, but she sucked, so she's dead last besides this, right? But like all these other girls, it's just like, okay, cool, there's this thin veil of pretending they're doing something else, but really they're just a horn dog. At least this one's just straight up a horn dog, and it's not just a horn dog. She's a horn dog with conviction of being obsessed with Batman, and she's a psychologist, so it makes sense. All of that adds up to me. Again, not good, still number one.
All right, so raise your hand if you think she's better than Russian Catwoman. Hands up. So everyone's hands are up. Raise your hands if you think she's better than Catwoman Returns. Me and Nick put our hands down. Andy's hands. Andy, what are you voting?
Andy's hands down.
Down.
That's okay, down. Then there you have it. Rankings are number one, Vicky, number two, Andrea, number three, Catwoman, number four, Chase Meridian, and number five, Russian Catwoman.
I want to
talk real quick about okay, two things I want to say, Nick. One about Chris O'Donnell. Growing up in the 90s, I was a young boy, and I didn't know who these actors were and all these like famous people. So I just heard about Chris O'Donnell. And then when NSYNC happened, I heard about Chris Kirkpatrick.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize they were different people.
Yeah.
So I always thought that Robin was in NSYNC.
Yeah.
Which that makes sense. A great thing to think. But I want to talk about the scene of the Batmobile going up the wall. Because
how's it get down?
For the uninformed, they might look at me, Tim Geddes, and be like, Tim's going to fucking love that scene. He's going to be all about it. You couldn't be more wrong. That sucked. It was so stupid. Why was that the scene, Nick? Why was that the scene that they decided to not cut away at all? They're going
to
show every single part
of
it. Every single going up the wall. And it's just like, until the end. Until the end. What happens?
It's dangling like a Christmas tree ornament. That's what happens. Two-Face is like, and Batman's like, you know what I mean?
A war of attrition is what it is. They just stare at each other.
Yeah, really, really weird camera cuts there towards the end, too. I thought that whole driving sequence was possibly like the most boring action sequence in any movie. Like, none of it was exciting. Like, none of it was choreographed well. It wasn't, like, you weren't worried at any point for any of the characters.
It's one of those things where, like, Two-Face just does not need to be in this movie at all. He could have been in the very opening of the movie, and then Batman should have arrested him, and then it should have just been Riddler's story. Because, truth be told, I wish they had dedicated more resources and better writing toward Jim Carrey. Do you remember Jim Carrey at this point was like, I think he had just done Ace Ventura, and he was this breakaway star from that movie.
94 was Mask and Ace Ventura, and then this is 95. I mean,
dude, this is like the 1-2-3 punch. And when I heard he was going to be Riddler, I was like, that's fucking perfect. And he just, I think he ad-libbed like 99% of his lines, because they were like, Jim, can you just say something funny here? And he's like, somebody stop me. And they're like, no, you already said that in the last movie. Can you say something else here? And he's like, that's gotta hurt. Sure, cut. Let's move on. We got nothing. We got some fucking lights to put up. We gotta move on.
The mole line made me laugh a lot.
That's like my mole. No, but yeah. Like, because Jim Carrey's legitimately like, this is Jim Carrey when he was like hungry, was knocking it out of the park with every performance. And I just don't think they give him anything real. I just think the writing is too bad for him.
I think you're giving them a lot of credit to say that, you know, if they would have taken Harvey Dent out of the movie early, then the writing would have significantly improved, because they could have had more resources for it.
I wish that Harvey Dent had been. Well, first off, can we talk about how Harvey Dent got his face when apparently Batman's just sitting in the courtroom? And then it's just a second too late to getting that acid off of Harvey's face, or like stopping the acid from Harvey's face.
Also, the acid very clearly hits all of his face. There's a moment where he holds the paper up and it's like, oh, that's cool. And then 2 seconds later, it's all on his face and he's like, ah.
Yeah. I just Two-Face in this just never, it just doesn't work for me. I think shout out to Tommy Lee Jones from Men in Black, but stay in your lane.
So with the Riddler, though, it's funny. Andy and Nick and I were talking about this, I think, on Internet Explorers a little bit. But this week, it's actually even more relevant. It's funny watching this movie because Riddler in this movie and Edward Nygma in this movie is exactly the same plot and acting style as Jamie Foxx in Amazing Spider-Man 2 as Electro. Like, the way that they're, as a human, they're just fucking already a cartoon character, and then they get the powers and they're even crazier.
Sure, sure.
And the idea of Jamie Foxx getting another shot at a new Electro is so exciting to us, because we're all like, Jamie Foxx is dope and we believe he could do a good Electro, not based on what he had done previously as Electro, but just as the idea. Mm-hmm. Same exact thing here. I want to give Jim Carrey another shot at Riddler, because I bet he could fucking nail it. It's just, this is what we got is what we got.
Yeah. But, remember, it always comes down to direction, right? In writers, like, they wrote it to be this way. And like, for him, as he gets smarter to get more Jim Carrey, which, it's like, all right, I guess I get what I mean. Like, I think there's like moments of brilliance in it where, like, everything he does where he's emulating Bruce Wayne and like really carrying that through line, right? Of the first time they meet in the R&D lab, right? And he has all the shit around him and he's so obsessed with him. And then to see that grow and then have him do it, it's all great. But then, I know if we can blow the dust off the wig song, Andy.
Is it a wig? I don't know. Wigging out with Scarpino. No.
And then they put him in this terrible wig.
Excuse me. I have to do the intro. You did your intro 15 times. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Wiggin' Out with Scarpino, the show within a show where we talk about wigs. Greg, what was your point?
How bad Jim Carrey's short pink-haired wig is.
That was pretty bad. Well, was he wearing a wig there, or was he wearing a wig at the beginning of...
There's a scene where when he does like the with his hands, you can totally see the wig line on it. You can see,
because I think his normal hair is when they just cut his hair to look like Val Kilmer's, right?
Yeah, and I think that's so.
Yeah.
So I'm very confused by the Riddler as a villain having his own sort of makeup people, hair people, like the idea that when Edward Nygma becomes hot and has like, you know, his kind of his short brown hair and he's like the playboy guy, and then Drew Barrymore is like, you don't look like Bruce Wayne does in a suit, like what the fuck, and he's like, shut up, whatever. But then he becomes, I guess before that, he's got the short pink hair, and the short pink hair grows into longer, weirder pink hair where he looks like a Dr. Seuss character.
Right.
I'm just very confused by a lot of his evolution. Like, we don't really see a whole lot.
It's almost
changes, but he's getting crazier suits and shit. Really bizarre.
So, Andy, what you're saying is logically in this movie, he would have to be wearing a wig at some point, because there's no possible way his hair could go long, short, long, short, long, short.
And right. pink brown.
Yeah,
yeah, wait, this might be one of the rare cases where Wiggin' Out is actually in the movie, like it's in the world.
Built into, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think the pink hair is part of the disguise for him, and then it's
impressive. Impressive.
So do we think the brown hair when he's hot Edward Nygma is the wig?
I think so. And then I think when he takes it off, it's that pink hair. Because I think like Batman, he's really the Riddler and he's dressing up like Enigma now.
How did his hair grow so fast?
Because he's taking his Hims vitamins, baby. Or keep
that's true. Ladies and gentlemen, this episode, not a great segue, brought to you by Me Undies. Undies believes that comfort is more about it's more than what's touching your skin. It's about feeling comfortable in your skin. Your skin, not someone else's skin. You need to remember that. Me Undies, baby. This isn't a Michael Myers movie, but it is almost Halloween, which means you can now match your undies to the spookiest season of all time. I thought they were about to say this.
I didn't know where they were going with it. Yeah, I didn't know where they were going with it.
Me Undies just launched 3 new Halloween prints. So whether you're into cats, bloods, or skeletons, they've got something right up your haunted alley. Oh, God, Nick, that one was for you.
Yeah, it is.
That haunted bloods? Alley.
Like the gang?
I don't think so.
I think it was supposed to be singular blood, like you're into blood or ghosts. But Tim likes to make everything a little bit more risque.
Their undies grow on trees. Seriously, they're made from the most irresistibly soft nature's natural fibers sourced from beechwood trees. Never run out of undies with Me Undies membership, a subscription that sends new pairs right to your door. Joey Noel's doing this. She just got some with dinosaurs on them. Very exciting stuff. Me Undies has a great offer for you guys. For any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off and free shipping. Me Undies also has their problem-free philosophy.
Yes.
If you're not satisfied with any product for any reason, they'll refund or exchange it. No caveats, no questions. Caveat, word of the day. What a good
great,
one.
Great word.
To get your 50% off your first order and free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. And next up, shout out to HelloFresh. You can get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. HelloFresh offers convenient delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. Recently, Gia made some for this household. It's a little pork ragu. Big fan of that. HelloFresh offers so many delicious options every week to help you break out of your recipe rut and try new things. HelloFresh delivers pre-portioned ingredients so you're not overbuying, which is a burden on the planet and your wallet. Do not burden those things. Keep your fridge stocked by adding extra proteins or sides like garlic bread to your weekly order. Kev, what's your thoughts on garlic bread?
I love it. I love it so much, Tim Tam.
Go to HelloFresh.com/80morning and use code 80morning to get a total of $80 off across 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. Again, that is HelloFresh.com/80morning. Do it.
So we're not doing plot.
We are. I mean, we are, but we're doing it the fun way where we're just having. We have so much to say about this movie. We just keep talking about parts of it.
Yeah. Okay. And also, there's no plot. So
let's make our box. Andy. Can we all talk about the fact how cool we thought it was when Robin stole the Batmobile?
Did we think it was cool? I got so pissed at that moment.
I love him driving through the thing. I love the neon gang. Doesn't Batman kiss the girl? That was all great. It was the breakdown for me in communication.
Was that great?
It was the breakdown of communication for me where Alfred somehow let him steal the Batmobile.
That's exactly what I wanted to bring up.
We brought you into our home. Be cool. Bruce Wayne's Batman. All right, cool. All right, let me show you. Where are you going? What are you doing? Stop sign.
He definitely strong-armed him a little bit, you know? And that scares me.
For sure.
I really wanted, in my head, I see him rolling down the stairs, poof, landing, you know, and he sees, like, all the gadgets. And he looks at Alfred standing there, and Alfred just, to raise a gun and just shoot him. We can't have any witnesses here.
He just falls into the pit.
I legitimately thought Mickey that's Mail. What he needed to do. Also, hiding the door to the Batcave behind just a thing that turns.
Rotating.
Seems really stupid.
You know, Bruce Wayne's got this weird channel system to shoot him through in this futuristic pod.
Shuttle.
But for fucking Alfred to go, it's just he just pushes a thing and it spins around. Don't even get me started on the security systems of the Batcave. Once the intruder is in, can the systems do anything other than scream intruder alert?
Nope.
This happens twice in this movie.
It was the 90s.
But here is why the security is so bad. The fact that you're hearing intruder alert, and the Batmobile is like revealing.
I'm still coming up.
Like you What's think it would like be hidden.
Shut
it's
down.
Like,
The first like trip laser you hit starts bringing the Batmobile up. The second one sets off intruder alert, but once the Batmobile starts, there's no way to stop it.
Yeah, the third one just starts shooting user manuals at you just so you can figure out how to pilot all this shit. Yeah.
So when the alarm was going off, I watched this movie a couple days ago, so I don't remember exactly what was weird about it, but they were saying those words weird, right? It kept going on. Like, I think it was alert.
Intruder alert. Like, intruder alert. Intruder alert. Intruder alert.
It was like
alert.
That. There was something like, I need to watch it again.
Tim, you're not wrong. Tim, you're not wrong. Because it was being said in a weird way where you can tell they obviously added that sound effect in way later because they didn't really decide on what they wanted it to sound like. Because it sounds bizarre and you don't really fully know that it's saying intruder alert unless you see the subtitle that says intruder alert. And then when the Riddler's in there, he's going intruder alert or whatever. And it sounds
intruder alert. Like, shut up.
It sounds nothing like what the thing is saying. So you could tell that like they had a total, a different decision on what it should go and what should it sound like. Which like, you know, by the way, The movie has way worse issues than the intruder alert sounding.
I do want to give a shout out to the fact that the Batwing is just hanging upside down. That's how he stores it. And I'm like, I have to imagine that it comes down to him. Otherwise, can you imagine him climbing into it? And he's like, we got to figure out a different way.
I can see him doing that, though, climbing into it and trying to get into it. But it's like upside down. And he's like, all right.
Yeah.
Why do I always do this? Why do I always
again?
Here's the thing. Shout out to YouTube. I just typed in intruder alert Batman Forever and it was there. Like, God, okay, that's great. Perfect. They're saying intruder alert. Okay. Alert.
That's how they say it. Do you want to send me the link on Discord and I can open it up and we can all hear it?
That's the Gotham accent.
It's British.
It's true. No, that's cool. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Now, and that's the thing about, like, again, him being a college-age Dick Grayson. Whether he's going to be, you know, 25 or if he's going to be 18 or whatever.
Why did he need a ward, though? Or why didn't he need to become a ward?
Well, they didn't do that, right? Bruce is going to let him walk. It's not like he's adopting him. It was very much like, hey, you've got nobody. Chill out here and figure it out. And then it's just when they fucking, hey, you can have a fucking free motorcycle and a nice burger if you stick around.
No.
But
why?
That's a good point. Because he mentions, he goes, you saved me a ton of paperwork at the fucking like social services. But Kevin's point is, if I'm 25 years old and my family dies, there's no social funeral.
Yeah.
There's nothing else.
Throw the funeral.
1-2 bedroom apartment that I live in by myself because I'm a 25 year old man. There's nobody needs to help me at all with this stuff. Okay. All you need to do is like
a lot of good social services. All right.
He was 17.
Yeah, he was 17. He certainly didn't look 17.
No, but canonically he was 17.
They should have made him more younger.
So anyways, back to this Batcave business, though. It's like, this is one of those things where, like, when, you know, he wants to get in the room and Alfred's like, Master Dick, and he's like, hey, Al. Oh, okay, cool, you're all the way up there. And that would work so much better if he was 12 years old. If he was the 12-year-old comic book gymnast, Dick Grayson, coming down there. Yeah, because at 17, like, fucking boundaries, fucker, get out of here. Enjoy the burger and the motorcycle that I haven't seen you work on once in this movie.
And how slow does that door close? Jesus Christ.
Or how fast does he come down?
He's going down fast.
He's not coming down fast. It takes forever.
Almost as slow as people fall at the end of this movie when he's saving both of them. And this was always the thing that bothered me when I first saw this. I was like, all right, let me get this straight. You jumped off to save two people. It took 45 minutes for them to almost hit the bottom of the thing. And then when we save Chris O'Donnell, it's very slow and you pretty much destroy all the tension from the scene. Doesn't matter. And then Harvey Two-Face Dent falls off and you just watch him fall. You just go, well, I guess that's the old Batman Begins line. I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. That's killing him. If you have the power to save someone by jumping off and shooting your cool, again, Tim, very cool, little grappling hooks from the from your forearm hooks, why not save him? But let's be honest, we all just want these people to die.
I love the idea of Robin afterwards being like, I wanted to do that. You said we shouldn't.
No, they cut to him and he's like, yes, yes, like bloodthirsty, just coming in his pants because he just killed the guy.
Jesus.
Oh, it's terrible.
So let's talk about it really, really quick. Obviously, the Batmobile is stolen by Robin. I want to get back to the scene because we kind of brushed off. Greg said it's a great scene.
It's just, I mean, it's one of the high points of this film. All right. It's got the black lights. It's got the thing. It's got Chris O'Donnell doing a very fucking stereotypical Mexican accent or Hispanic accent, I guess. You want to take a ride? What does he call the car? I don't know. Yeah.
Don't do it.
I don't know. But the music playing is awful.
Don't do it.
And, like, And there's no real... This is a really, really good scene to sort of showcase how just bad the writing is and how bad what they wanted the audience to feel, right? Because Dick Grayson goes out there and, you know, they're like, oh, you're a bad boy or whatever. And obviously he's supposed to feel sort of slighted by that. Like, no, yeah, I'm supposed to be Batman or whatever. And then we see this future spoilers kind of, you know, coming to fruition. But then he fights a bunch of gang members or whatever. And then he's going to be surrounded. Batman comes down to save him. And immediately goes after Batman. You're supposed to be like, he starts like fighting Batman, and it's terrible. Sort of shocking as a viewer because none of those feelings had been shown ever, and sure. I didn't Andy, really know
Batman wasn't there, you know, to save his parents.
You could, but also he's like,
now he knows. Now he knows that if he Bruce Wayne could have just stood up and said, "I'm Batman," his parents would be alive. Andy, you don't understand the scene.
He did say that.
Yeah. But like, we didn't see him be mad about, like, there were no feelings of resentment when he figured out.
Oh, yeah, when he Bruce stole Wayne the Batmobile, Batman.
He just was like, yeah. "Fuck yeah! Look at all these gadgets!" Like that's.
And again, I think this
weird turn.
I think it would have worked a lot better if he was way younger, if he didn't know how to drive, yeah. If he was like, "I am this 12 to 14 year old kid." But I think one of the things that's kind of, and not insulting, but really really lazy about this is that they just start Robin off. Knowing everything he needs to know to be Robin, right? And I don't, that's not the fun factor of when you're a kid. Like when you're a kid, the whole point of Robin, the Robin character, is to, like, when you're young, to think, oh my God, if I just had the stuff, Batman would take me in and then train me to be a badass, and I would get to train with like the best fighter on the planet and go fight crime, right? It's like, but it's fantasy fulfillment for children, which is why the Robin character's there. When you just start him off as just an adult who doesn't really need to learn anything, it's not as fun. And they just throw him into the costume, and he's like, I guess you're as good of a fighter as this guy who has spent the last 15 years in Gotham fighting crime and like trained with all these masters in the world. It just feels cheap.
Batman's the same way, though. Like Batman, you know, I never in these movies, just in this canon of what they've shown us, get the sense that he trained with any masters or anything.
Yeah, that's 100%, 100%. Yeah.
Are you sure? Because when the Graysons are about to die, he's beating ass on the show floor of the circus.
He's like, beating ass. Like,
Bruce Wayne is down there, and you gotta assume that there's random people kind of looking around and being like, Bruce Wayne is fucking kicking ass right now. Like, are you Bruce watching?
For sure.
Did you see him climb up that fucking spotlight, knock the guy down, and then fucking rappelling? To fight these guys? He is
subduing all of these criminals with these weird light up guns on the show floor.
The light up guns
is incredible.
The Tommy guns with like the LEDs in it. I love. I'm all about LEDs being thrown really in places.
No, you know what? Really before we get too far away from it, one thing I want to point out that I really enjoy is the aftermath of Dick stealing the car, like we were talking about or whatever. And if you remember in the Batcave before the I can stop you or whatever. Or I don't know, that's not even there, I guess, actually. But it's when they're having this conversation, and he goes, you know, ever since Two-Face killed my parents, I've been like focused on revenge. And when I was out there today fighting those guys, even fighting you, I pictured him. And like, think about how he fought those guys versus how he fought Batman. Yeah. We're like, no.
What are you talking about?
You couldn't do anything.
I want to throw this back, though. I want to talk about the scene, though, where with this girl. Who looks like she stepped right off of the set of Saved by the Bell.
Sure. I knew you were going to say that. I don't know.
They're so Nick.
Yeah.
But like, she's in like a denim skirt. She looks like she just came from like Beverly Hills, and she's in the worst part of Gotham. And they're like, and they're just harassing her. And then when she's done, she's like, wow, that was an incredibly traumatizing experience. Like, I just got harassed by a bunch of guys that like bought out the fucking Dayglo face paint at the Walgreens. But I guess I'm okay. Should we make out now? I'm like, oh my God, this character. Why?
I love the idea of Batman over hearing this conversation. Doesn't Batman ever get out of kiss? I'm like, whoa, who said that? Like, what do you mean,
bro?
I don't
know
about kisses.
There was a tie-in comic that was a prequel to this, Nick, that talked about how her car broke down there and how she had to get out and like walk, and then, you know, a few things happened. She ended up here.
Makes sense.
There's a really, really funny scene that it's hard to explain right now, and it's hard for y'all to grasp what I felt, but it's so much, it felt like a video game scene, and you sort of need to watch it again to understand what I'm talking about. But when Bruce Wayne first goes to visit
Chase Meridian.
Chase Meridian. Who could forget her name? Chase Meridian.
Number four. Everyone. On the Bell of the Batman list.
Yeah. when he's inside of her little like psychiatrist fucking like lair or whatever, and he goes, "Oh, you got a thing for bats, huh?" She goes, "Oh, it's a Rorschach." You know, it's
you see what you want to see. Yeah,
a lot of people see what they want to see. So maybe the question should be, "Do you have a thing for bats?" Pause. Immediate, like very very short pause. Still playing with dolls, doctor. Oh, that's a Malaysian dream warden. And it felt like you're like, it felt like in a game when you're in a person's house and you're like just walking up to objects and it's like creating a little dialogue scene.
Interactable objects,
so,
yeah.
It was so weird because like nothing really led into the next part. They were just like, we have to throw all these things in there and we don't really know how. Just have Bruce Wayne walk around and just talk about shit. And like, let's get some back and forth because otherwise we don't know how to make these characters interact.
And
we also have him walk up to things.
It's yeah, my follow-up question would be like, what else do people see in this? This is a bat. It's clearly a bat.
Yeah.
No,
it's a Malaysian dream warden. It's supposed to block your dream. Like, and then like, I don't know, it was terrible. What's up, Kev?
I was just gonna say that it's a bat, like where they have that bat moment. That's another moment where I was like, all right, Bruce, you gotta get that gun. She knows too much, you know?
A fun little fact here for you. About Tim Burton. Tim Burton said, quote, "I always hated those titles, like Batman Forever. That sounds like a tattoo that somebody would get when they're on drugs or something. Or something some kid would write in the yearbook to somebody else." What?
It's weird.
I have high problems with some of those titles. And it was rumored that Burton was considering the title Batman Continues while he was still slated to direct.
Not great. Batman 3, way better than Batman Continues. Batman
keep
again.
Keep going, Batman. Keep going. There's a scene later on. Oh, God damn it. I lost my train of thought. There's like all the, there's just so many really, really funny scenes. Oh, towards the end, when the Holy Rocks Batman, or Holy fucking whatever the hell, when they're finally sort of on this fake island or whatever. And Tommy Lee Jones, which, by the way, like Two-Face, you got to be a little bit more dynamic. The serious side of Two-Face can't be a maniac. And then the maniac side of Two-Face, maniac 2.0, like you got to have some sort of dynamic, because like he walks out and he's like, "You got a little of this, had a little of this." And it's like, no, you got to make.
Yeah, same tone.
You get a taste of what you want, right? When at the very end, when Two-Face has got the drop on Batman, Robin, and Chase, and he's like, "Now I get to kill you," and Bruce is, or Batman's like, "Aren't you forgetting your coin, Harvey?" And he's like, "You're right, Bruce. You always were a true friend." And it's like, oh yeah, like I want more of that, right? Yeah, it's like, yeah, because even like in the beginning when we get introduced to Two-Face in the second Bank of Gotham, right? They shoot it the entire way on regular Tommy Lee Jones' side, where he's given this whole justice fucking monologue, and then he turns to blind seeking work, and they like focus and bring up the purple light on his face. It was like, yes, play more with that duality, but yeah, no, it's never done other than the fucking weird ass, you know, hideout he has where they're eating filet mignon on one side and roasted on the other.
I think it's too much. I think it is too much. Y'all mentioned it earlier. It's him and Jim Carrey trying to one up each other. That's all it feels. And like, did y'all talk about how they hated each other for this movie?
Didn't talk about it, but that was one of the things. Is that
that's like a known thing?
Yeah, is that Tommy Lee Jones straight up told Jim Carrey he doesn't like his movies, and Jim Carrey was like, "Fuck you."
He was just like, "Leave me alone." Yeah, like, yeah, I'm not.
Jim Carrey documentary? Is that right? The Netflix? Because I remember hearing the story from him over like, on the first day of the set, Jim Carrey walked up and was like, "I'm a huge fan, Mr. Jones, excited to work on this thing." And he's like, "I have no respect for you or your movies." And he was like, fuck you.
The scene I wanted to talk about, though, is just like, Robin is doing his thing on the ground floor. And I think by this point, Batman is up doing something with Riddler or whatever. But Robin's like on this rock, like on that little island thing. And then Tommy Lee Jones like jumps out with his gun. He's like, and immediately gets his shit kicked in. Like immediately gets like a roundhouse to the face, and he's on the ground immediately. And it's like Tommy Lee Jones, what was the plan, bro? Like, it just wasn't very good. And that led into, "That's from my dad and from my mom." And
my brother. I Tommy Lee Jones, I think more of is like Men in Black or No Country for Old Men, right? Is that right? And I always think of him as like this older, subdued actor that takes serious roles. And so to watch this again with more, 20 years of Tommy Lee Jones in front of it, in like all the weird, like he does so many like vocalization, like, and it's totally like, oh my God, it is the 66 Batman. It is what they're going for, right?
Which
it
sucks.
They do a lot of that during the bank or the jewelry stealing scene where they're just kind of like wreaking havoc. And it's just a lot of like him and Jim Carrey going like crazy. Like
they're like Lego villains.
Yeah.
Real quick, too, I want to give a shout out. This is something I should have given you guys for extra credit homework, but it's something if you ever watch Batman Forever again, I had seen it going and making the rounds on Twitter a couple weeks ago, months ago. I don't even know. But it was like, shout out to the stunt devil who plays Alfred in this scene. And it's the one where they hit him with the cane and he falls down and they come in. And like, if you go back and watch it and you watch Alfred, when he gets knocked out and falls down, he knows he puts the tray too far over. So he has to push it immediately. That way Jim Carrey can open the door and get it in the next like thing.
Wow.
It's like a fun little like, oh, look at that.
That's cool.
That's professional.
That's like movie magic right now. Can we talk about really
Happy
quickly
Halloween.
How insane their fucking cod pieces are.
Oh, they're big.
Like, oh my God. So big. And it's that you almost have this moment where, you know, we see Bruce Wayne, we see Batman in the new sort of stealth suit, whatever the night vision thing, that's like his new advanced suit. And it's got a giant ass cod piece. And then, what do you think, Alfred? Should we go by sea or by air? And then Robin, what about both? And then he reveals himself with his giant fucking cod piece. And there's a moment where they kind of were like, they meet the face to face. And yeah, and Bruce Wayne kind of does this like, it's a big fucking dick. like, Alfred, come on, bro. Like,
I swear to God, and I could have been, I watched it late last night. And of course, Tim, my TV is a plasma, so it's going to be a little bit more contrasty and cast some shadows, but like there was a moment where Chris O'Donnell turned and I swear to God they carved a little bit of the tip into the bottom of the
Jesus. I kind of saw that
I was like, what the fuck? They're so big.
It was all ridiculous, right.
are we so big
And now earlier I thought we were gonna hit a little segue, a natural segue point, but we decided I think go to Ragu Alfalf because Greg says that's a good suit.
And best bat suit time, best bat suit time. We're singing about the bat suits. Podcast with a podcast. Welcome to the best bat suit.
I was gonna say bat suit chatting. Gonna write the bat suit. It's a zoot suit.
Tim, what was your song gonna be? Good.
I wasn't gonna have a song.
Fucking coward. Right now for best bat suits, we have number one, Phantasm, number two, Batman Returns, number three, 89 Batman, number four, 66 bat suit. Where do we want to put the Batman Forever bat suit?
Now I've pulled just them all the up one. If you want to see on the images here.
Just the one he wears throughout predominantly.
The normal one, not the stupid sonar thing at the very
end. Why? I feel like the sonar suit. It's got both. So the one on the right is the suit he wears. No worries. Which I think actually.
I mean, the sonar suit's ridiculous, so let's just talk about
what's
the one
ridiculous
that
about it. The ears finally look cool. They don't look stupid.
The sonar suit only looks crazy here because it is in full lighting, and that's the material of it. It's supposed to be kind of reflective-ish, like a gunmetal sort of reflection. Because
it absorbs sound, guys.
But I do think that the cowl and the headpiece on the sonar suit looks a little too much like mid-90s Oakley. Like
sure,
because the fins, because the lines, going, yeah, the ridges.
Yeah, they went for a lot of like the technical lines. Not a huge fan of it. The regular suit, I think, looks fucking awesome.
Yeah,
I think it looks really cool.
Yeah, I always thought it looked pretty cool. It was a nice iteration on the two that came before it, or specifically the 89 bat suit. So I always thought they kind of did a good job with that. I think Val Kilmer from like the nose down looks good, but it always bothered me that his eyes that they had to cut out the extra holes in the left and right of his eyes because his eyes are just a little too close together.
And then
when he smiles, I was like, never smile ever again in this suit. Please don't do that.
His eyes are really close together, Nick.
Because you're Batman.
Yeah, you are
Tim,
Batman.
What do you think?
But that was a moment just for him. Like, you know what I mean? Batman's allowed to smile every so often when he turns around that.
This one's low for me. Like, I would.
Wait, even the sonar
put
one?
This, both of them. I'm going to put this probably like above 66.
So number four.
Yeah.
And see, that's where I'm torn up with. Like, the sonar suit, I think, if anything, drags it all down.
What?
And so I feel like you got to enter him in different categories if we're doing this. Maybe we should.
I
Andy?
Well, you mean like having an advanced suit ranking?
No, no, I'm saying, yeah, now we rank the normal Batman Forever suit and then the Sonar Batman. We put two suits onto this list.
I think we should
that. We cannot do a combination yet because I think...
Okay, then I would say right now, then getting Sonar suit out of the way, I would put dead last. Sonar. I hate the Sonar suit. I think it looks stupid. I think the Oakley thing is a great way to put it. He can't turn his head. He loses all flexibility. I think it's the worst.
Okay. I just hate how shiny they are. It's just like,
Don't say they.
Both of them, though.
I know, but we're talking about Sonar suit right now.
I put them both in the same place.
I'm voting Sonar suit dead last. Where does anybody want to argue for where Sonar suit should go?
I mean, I think it should go much higher than that, but you guys are...
I think above 66.
For sure. Above 66. Yeah.
The 66 suit's iconic and fun. This suit's boring and shitty. Nobody cares about this suit.
What? I'm with Greg. Greg has my vote. Cool. Greg, I'm just giving you my
vote. All right, Tim, you're the vote breaker. Is it above 66 or not?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Right.
Well...
You're stupid idiots.
That was anti-climactic.
I do want to say, though, that the standard regular suit, the standard normal suit that he wears throughout the most of the movie, just reminds me of a better return suit. I think
100%.
And I think it works better because I think Val Kilmer is taller and has a bigger frame. So when he's on camera, they did a little bit more to not make the head look like this giant fucking thing that will topple over if you aren't strong enough. And he looks more proportionate. He looks more like he should be, where it's like the head isn't this fucking overbearing thing, and he's got good shoulders, body looks great. I think it's
now, do you dock at all for having the bat nipples? This is, of course, something that is Batman and Robin get mocked a lot for this, but it's really Batman Forever here that started.
Batman Returns doesn't have the bat nipples?
No.
Because here, this third suit is the Batman Returns suit, right?
No,
that's Batman Forever normal suit.
Val Kilmer.
That's the suit you just watched.
Yeah. Yeah, the nipples kind of threw me off. Not a fan of the nipples.
I don't like the nipples either. That's why I feel like to make it fair, I think I would put it number 3, below Batman Returns, above 89. Put it right there in that sweet spot. Because I do think, again, this suit's awesome. I love how thin it is on his face. I love that contour they put it in. He's able to move. It sticks to his face the whole time.
Yeah,
the fight scenes I think look better in this suit.
Yeah, I will. You know what? I'm with Greg. Number 2, right? Is what do you have it?
No, I said number 3. So put it up. Returns above it, 89 below it. Split the difference.
Sounds good.
Because I don't like the bat nipples. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, Mask of Phantasm was number 1.
Correct. I'm still leaving that there. That's the classic Kevin Conroy iconic.
Yeah, I would go for number 3 as well, Greg. I think you made a great call. I'm with you.
Anybody else want to fight?
Nope.
All right. Batman Forever enters in our normal suit. Batman Forever normal.
And I'll tell you what, the best thing about the stealth night suit, night vision Oakley suit is flying in the fucking jet. And
oh, yeah, totally. Just like 66, right? Where like fucking Commissioner Gordon up there, and now they turn it off. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Do you think that Commissioner Gordon is like a secret alcoholic, and he's like, thank God we don't have to do anything, Batman?
I don't think it's a secret at all.
He's just out there. They're on that roof just partying. Do you think like when the second Batman goes by, he's like, all right, turn off the light, kick up the barbecue. Let's have a little late night.
Boys, the city's safe. We don't need to worry about nothing.
They don't do shit. The police in this movie do nothing. It's such a useless character to have him in there.
I want to say the secret invitation at midnight.
Yeah.
Where Batman, it's so bad. I sort of assumed it was a dream sequence that was going to be make believe.
Sure.
And it kept on going and going. I was like, oh, this is real. Like this, she's actually like kissing
this isn't
him.
Really
and,
happening.
I'm not feeling anything though. I like someone else. Like it's just
God when he turns around and smiles.
This movie is full of unbelievable shit. Obviously, it's a superhero movie, but this is the most unbelievable of any of the scenes because this is just not how human beings would act. Like, it's so fucking bizarre. It was really, really off-putting for me. Hated it.
Understandable. Yeah, no. I think we all agree with that. Yeah, that it was not done well there. What's up? And it's also the thing, like, you know, remember that is, like, when did she make the flip on Bruce Wayne? You know what I mean? She doesn't know it till she kisses Batman. It's like, this is some weird messaging all around.
Yeah, I mean, for 99% of the movie, they're not connecting at all. And she's just like, listen, I got to be... She's like straight up with him. She's like, you got to have a shot here, buddy. I'm into this guy that runs around.
And I mean, again, more power to her. Like, I appreciate it. But she's like, listen, it's just, I'm here to fuck. I don't want to fuck you. I want to fuck Batman. And she's like, you know what? I do want to fuck you. I don't want to fuck Batman anymore.
Yeah, it's just, it's very
That's why she should have ranked higher. All right. She was very honest and clear with what she wanted.
There was a podcast in her head. She's like, which Batman do I, or which guy do I want to fuck more?
I do like that they tried to like tie her in with the B story, which, you know, these movies don't necessarily need to emphasize too much, but I do like they try to have a level of dimension to Bruce Wayne's like psyche and his character and like how he was like, oh, I'm trying to remember more things about this traumatic event that happened. And in doing so, he kind of like heals a little bit where he's like, I don't really need to be Batman anymore because I'm okay with this. And I could have a normal life, but it's only for 5 seconds. And then the security completely fucking fails at the mansion.
What did he remember? Like the red notebook?
His dad's journal.
He was no revelation there.
Totally. No, it's how he found the fucking cave.
Which we already saw in the last movie, right? Didn't he fall in the cave? No? No?
No, he never fell in the cave. The parents died in the first one. We saw the pearls.
I'm thinking
of the
animated movie where they.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. I go just back to the suit thing. I just want to shout out to Robin's suit. I've always loved the suit. Greg, we had a very contentious episode of KF Podcast where it was you, me, and Kevin. Was Barrett there? Yeah, I think Barrett.
You and me were there.
Barrett was running the show, and Nick was there as well, and we were ranking all the bat suits. Obviously, that was the unofficial list or whatever. But
sure.
I said I love the Robin suits in the movies, and I got a lot of shit for it. Mm-hmm. And I just want you all to say that I was right, is what I want to happen right now.
That you should write the shit for it?
You don't think Robin had a cool-ass suit in this movie?
I don't. My problem with the suits in this movie are they're just too shiny and bright.
It's because they're like too well-lit.
At all times, yeah. But it's like that was a choice.
The Robin suit's so cool.
And on top of that, the way Robin gets his suit is really lame.
So dumb.
It's set up as a get hype moment, and it is not.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rockin' Robin suit.
Welcome back, everyone.
Robin suits in the Batman cinematic universe. Right now, obviously, by default, we have the 1966 Robin as the number one Robin suit. Do we think this suit from Batman Forever for Robin is better than that iconic Batman 66 Robin suit?
Yes.
Here's the thing. I'm kind of with Andy on this, where I like the design of it. I liked when he came out, it was muted colors and it matched the Batman suit. I just hated the fact that they were like, we're just gonna run with this one earring, huh? That's gonna be the thing that happens.
One earring and the biggest dick ever. Like distracting dick.
It's so I love the matte sort of metallic look to it. I think it's so cool. I think the green and the red they chose were perfect for it. Like they're not too saturated. It's just a sleek ass fucking suit. I think it looks so cool, man.
Here's what I gotta say. I gotta agree with Andy, and I apologize for any shit Andy got on the podcast about the Robin suit being good. All right, this was a good Robin suit. I enjoyed it. It's better than the 66 Robin suit. We've said it.
I don't think that it is a good suit. However, I have to be consistent with my rankings, and I put Batman Forever suit over 66 Batman. So I have to put this over Robin.
God, those dick pieces are so big. I'm
They're
looking
fucking
at
huge.
Let me see them.
Oh, it reminds me of Nick. In this photo, it looks like they did sculpt the little tip in.
Yeah, yeah, it's there.
Wait, why?
It reminds me of when Richard Donner talks about Superman, and like when they'll do interviews with him, and there's a bunch of documentaries and stuff. But like in particular, of like how much they went through with the suit, and how there was basically a decision of either he has to have the biggest dick in the world, or it shouldn't be noticeable. And they went with the not noticeable way, whereas Batman Forever was like biggest dicks in the world. All right, God.
Yeah.
Kev, look at this. Please bring this up.
That's what I'm saying.
That is 100%. That is a dick.
That's his dick tip.
All right, sorry. Hold on. This is so annoying to open.
Now here's the thing, Andy. I think I'm with you. I think the suit is a cool iteration on the Robin suit, but Robin in general, like the first time we see him with the helmet and he's got a Robin sprayed on it, I'm like, that's the dumbest fucking thing ever seen. Yeah. I think Robin only makes sense
if he's like
dumb.
It's bending the wrong way too, right at the end there.
Well, that's how mine bends, Kevin. How's your bend?
That's how I look in my MeUndies.
Tim, stand up, take your pants off. It's the one to one
comparison. Yeah, man. It's so egregious, dude. It's so egregious.
It's all
Give me with some haiku and review, baby.
Hold on. Real quick before we do that. How cool was it for you guys, the really, really big comic fans who understand this shit, for him to go, what should I name myself? The something something Nightwing? What should be my name? Was that cool for y'all?
That was cool.
It was cool.
Nowhere near as cool as when he's trying to leave and Bruce is like, Circus got to be halfway to Metropolis by now. Like, yeah, fuck yeah.
That was cool.
I didn't even catch that. That's crazy. Seven syllables in the middle. You need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
When we were doing the rigmarole to all this, it got sidetracked really fast, so I didn't give a shout out to our Patreon producers, Muhammad and Al Tribesman. Thank you very much for supporting us. And also, you can support us by going to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Jules Venato did. Riddler has a plan. For if knowledge is power, then a god I am. They also leave a note saying, I came into this expecting to cringe and laugh at the movie. And while it has its moments, Jim Carrey was awesome. I love Chris O'Donnell's Robin. And the movie has so many let's fucking go moments that I wound up enjoying the hell out of it. Joe Merton says, we remember Seal, but let us not forget that U2 also slaps. U2 did have a song in this show.
That's right. True.
Wait, am I crazy? And was Kiss from Rose in the movie?
No, the second the ending. It's the credits, second credit song. You get the U2 song, and then you get "Kiss from a Rose."
Right. Okay.
You remain my power.
Liz Lawson says, "Batman and Robin, they're more than friends. They're partners. Rubberized nipples." Blackjack says, "Robin is 30. Riddler tries to play dirty. Chase is so thirsty." Yeah, I don't know if we're gonna beat that one. But the last one here, we got Chad Van saying, "My childhood Batman." But wow, this movie's horny. So very, very horny. Very.
Meet me here at midnight. Like,
what? Meet me at midnight. I'll be asleep and naked.
That's late, man. That's real late.
I don't mind the naked part. It's just like, why are you asleep?
Well, because that is weird if she was planning on it.
You don't think he got there right at midnight, right? He was like a little late.
Yes, I do. As horny as Batman is, yes, I think 11:45, he's across the way. Like, can I fucking go? Does it look desperate if I show up now?
It's true.
Nicole Kidman had her iPhone alarm set for 5 minutes before midnight to wake up and get ready. She was just taking a little nap, a bat nap, right?
Yeah. She needed that energy.
Whatever it is.
Also, hey, yeah, shout out to her, by the way, to Catwoman. We talked about it being the same universe. I appreciate that she's like, I read up on you. Like, what do I need? Skin tight leather and a whip?
Yeah.
Hot.
All right. Did we miss any of the things? I don't think so. We got the Batmobile. We got the Bat suit.
Are you fucking kidding? Andy, hit the Ragu Bagu song. Oh, God, right. Tim, you suck at those.
You're right.
Ragu. Bagu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys and Rad Guys Talk Bat Guys, the podcast within a podcast within a podcast within a podcast where we rank the Batman Cinematic Universe villains and, of course, the Batman themselves. Right now for Ragu Bagu as it stands, or aka Ragu Roga, the Rogues Gallery, we have number one, 89 Batman's Joker, number two, Phantasm, Joker and the Phantasm, number three, Batman Returns, Max, Penguin and Cat, and then number four, 66 Batman, Catwoman, Riddler, Penguin and Joker. Where do we want to put Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey, Two-Face and the Riddler?
I mean, this list is already so fucked that it's hard for me to put them anywhere.
I don't understand it.
I say, for me personally, I would put them at number four. So above 66, below Batman Returns.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think I'd put them above Batman Returns, but I don't care. It's a bad list. Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, I feel like Penguin sucked.
I would put them above Returns.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you for validating me.
And wait, hold on. What's one and two again?
Number one, Joker from 89. Number two, Phantasm. Number three, Batman Returns. Mm-hmm. Number four, Catwoman. Or I'm 66 right now. So we got to figure out where we want to put them. They're so campy and so weird. Like, I feel like it just doesn't, I don't know. In general, I just don't feel like they fit the universe. They're both good actors. They have their moments and everything else, yada, yada, yada. But like, I think Batman Returns was a more enjoyable cast of rogues.
I agree.
Okay,
so then let's do it the old school way. Who thinks Batman Forever's villains are better than 66? Raise your hand. Everybody hands are up. Who thinks they're better than Batman Returns? Right now it's just Kevin and Andy. That means that Batman Forever villains enter at number 4. Then for Ragu Bat Guys, where we rank the Batman Batman. Right now we have it as, shit, did we not rank this? Did we not do this segment last time? I don't have a listing, Tim, for where we put Conroy. Do you?
Sounds like you're a bad host, Greg.
Fuck, God damn it. I knew it would blow my face.
He got you.
Now, maybe you rushed me.
I do not
maybe
have the Batman me. Down.
All right, then hold on. Then we got to rank 2. Then for Ragu Bat Guys, we have number 1, Michael Keaton, 89. Number 2, Batman Returns, Keaton. Number 3, Adam West, 66. So now we have to figure out where do we want to put Kevin Conroy from Mask of the Phantasm.
Kevin Conroy, number 1.
Yeah, number 1.
Again, yeah. we said this last week, everybody, though. Don't judge based on nostalgia. How did you think of his performance in that movie?
You're right.
I thought number he was 2. The best.
Number 2.
It's number above 89.
Andy, what do you think?
I didn't love Kevin Conroy in that.
Yeah, me neither. I loved Kevin Conroy, but I didn't love him in that movie.
Number 2.
I would put him in number 2 then too, Andy.
Yes. Yeah, number 2.
I hate all of you.
There you
fucking
go.
Kevin crushing Conroy. This list so far. I'm getting everything I need. Love it.
And then now, where do we want to put Val Kilmer? Again, the list currently is number 1, 89, number 2, Phantasm, number 3, Keaton, Batman Returns, and number 4 is 66.
Number 1. If that's the list. If
that's,
that's the
what
list,
you
number
did.
One,
you created a problem.
Michael Keaton sucks as Batman.
I'd say number 3. He fell out of the seat. That's
again,
good comedy,
he does
guys.
More what? Batman things. He looks, his Bruce Wayne works.
Look, just because you're not attracted to Michael Keaton doesn't mean a lot of people are, okay?
Nobody's attracted to those little glasses, man.
The little glasses were the 80s, Tim. Get with it. That was all the rage back then. And so you could see quicksand better. Yeah. I think I'm actually with Tim on this a little bit, even though it's fun to make fun of. I think Val Kilmer does a good job as Batman. I just think the movie's not very good. I don't think he's better than Keaton or Conroy, but I think he's up there.
So how are you with Tim then? You're talking about
No. I don't think Val Kilmer was bad as Batman. I think he was good. I just don't. I mean,
well, no one's saying he's bad.
Like Keaton Moore.
What's the ranking again?
Number 1, 89. Number 2, Phantasm. Number 3, Batman Returns. Number 4, 66.
I would actually maybe put him above Returns.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
Well, personally, I would vote him. I honestly, I can make a case for dead last, but that would just be me with nostalgia for Adam West. So I would put him in. I would vote number 4, him above Adam West in 66.
I'll go with that.
Let's do the hand raising. Let's do the hand raising. Let's do the
all right. Who thinks he's better than Adam West in 1966? Raise your hand. All hands are up. Who thinks he's better than Michael Keaton in Batman Returns? Tim and just me and Nick are gone. So not they have the most. Yeah,
like, wait, you know what? No. I'm going down.
Okay. So you who? So only Tim and Andy vote that he's better than Batman Returns. All right, then. So now Val Kilmer is number 4 on the list. Adam West drops to number 5.
Thank Clooney, you. Number 1. Should we just vote right now for Clooney?
So now it's time.
Did you watch that one already?
I might have.
Yeah. All right. It's very clear. Dang. It's very clear, Nick.
Now it's time to rank the Batman movies. Currently, number 1, Batman 89. Number 2, Batman Mask of the Phantasm. Number 3, Batman Returns. Number 4, Batman 66. Kev, if you could bring it up,
yeah,
thank
I got
you very
it. There
much.
It is. There
it is. This one's hard for me, man. I just feel like 89 is so misranked here that it's hard for me to vote for this because sure. It's like I think this is better than 89, but I don't think it's as good as Returns. So just need to say that, but I guess I'm going to put it right above 66.
That's what I'm voting to.
Yeah, I'll do the same.
I think it should go above Returns, but it doesn't matter.
I have this above Phantasm.
Above Phantasm.
I was more entertained with this than I was with Phantasm. I thought Phantasm was, and that could just be in the way that we watch it. Like where Greg talks about, yes, don't think about Mark Hamill just as Joker. Think about Mark Hamill in this movie.
In this motion picture.
I felt the same way about Phantasm where it was very underwhelming for me. I thought I was prepared to be blown away. Like I remember that movie being incredible. And I just didn't have those same feelings the second time around. And I was more entertained with this movie. Even though it's campy and bad and good bad in a lot of parts, I was more invested throughout the whole thing. And it's way longer than Phantasm. Phantasm is only like 1 hour and 6 minutes. And I was more entertained with Forever.
Not just this movie. So there,
So there we go. That let's do the ranking. Who thinks it's better than 66? Raise your hand. Who thinks it's better than Returns? Raise your hand.
All right.
The new rankings are
number audio one. Listeners, it was Kevin and Andy who had their hands on.
Number one, Batman 89. Number two, Batman Mask of the Phantasm. Number three, Batman Returns. Number four, Batman Forever. And number five, Batman 66. Next week, we are actually this week, we're returning on Thursday with Conjuring 2 in review. Then next week, we will return with Batman and Robin. Until then.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
You saw me in the sea. You remain my power, my pleasure, my pain, and